I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand. And donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty and a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Hey, quick note before we begin. I was telling you before that Indigo has the book on sale for pre-order for 50%. I'm learning so much about the book industry. Amazon just put the book on sale for 51%. So that's how that goes down. Anyhow, buy it at whichever online store you prefer. If you'd like to buy it, it's half off or 51% off. And the reason I'm going to be continuing to talk about the book so much is because we are not soliciting any press in the Canadian media for this book. The only way this book is going to get talked about and bought is if we continue to talk about it on the show and if you keep telling people about it, because I just don't think it doesn't seem right for us to go with our hat in hand to the Canadian media that we cover and say, hey, can we have some positive publicity for the book? So that's why I continue to talk about it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Squarespace. With the help of Squarespace, tackling your next move might not be as difficult as it seems. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter the offer code CanadaLand to get 10% off of your first purchase plus a free domain. David Barry.
Hello.
Freelance journalist, columnist, most recently for the Globe and Mail and Hazlitt, among others.
Among others, yeah.
Glad to have you here on Shortcuts for the first time.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Dave, today we are going to talk about Gian Gomeshi's turn to podcasting, The Last Refuge for Scoundrels. We are going to talk about Post-Media Death Watch, Part 49.
Is it just that low?
Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it? And we're going to talk about CBC Says Sorry, and will likely say sorry again.
Several times before this is over, I think.
This episode of Canada Land Shortcuts is brought to you by Wayne Mabey, Wesley Burton, Jonathan Norris, John Patterson, Greg Atkinson, Jadeen Lannan, Abbas Kassam, and Andy McKim. Andy, why did you decide to be awesome?
Because I love the focus you have on the media in Canada and the stories the media doesn't cover. I also wanted to give you a shout out on Quebec stories. You asked whether we'd be interested. We are.
And once again, this episode is brought to you by Squarespace, which is great for portfolio sites for freelancers, great for small businesses, great for tons of different purposes. Anything you're thinking about, your next project that you have in the back of your mind, it is easier than you think to just begin. And you can kind of play around with Squarespace, pick a beautiful template, and start building that website that's just a little idea before you decide whether or not you want to unleash it upon the world. Whether you're hoping to start a business, change careers, or launch a new creative project, Squarespace gives you the ability to create an online platform from which to make your next big idea known to the world. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter the offer code CanadaLand you will get 10% off of your first purchase plus a free domain. It just couldn't be easier. They make the thing stupid simple. They support it. You don't have to worry about the back end. They update it. Once again, squarespace.com, offer code CanadaLand. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get like anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding like the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. So, Dave, I'll tell you a little story.
All right.
It's not much of a story. I'll just tell you what happened. About a couple of months ago, I started getting these tips that Jean Gomeshi was plotting a comeback. And various people gave me information saying, oh, I know somebody, a lawyer, I know somebody who's in marketing or PR, and they were approached by Gomeshi, and he offered to pay them a lot of money. He's staffing up. He wants to get his social media act together. He wants to get his marketing game. He wants to make sure he's legally covered. He's launching his comeback. And part of all these stories was that the person said no. And turned down the money because they were afraid, either because they had moral problems of their own, but all the secondhand information, which is why we never reported it, though a lot of it has been confirmed since by the fact that it's happened.
that he now has a podcast and presumably a staff and whatever else.
The big question that I had as I heard this, I said, well, you know, I figured he would try something sooner or later.
Yeah.
But what can he do? What would work? What would people listen to?
Well, I guess the answer is like slam poetry over like relaxation beats is that's what he's going with. So
no, that sounds ridiculous. Why would that? And I suppose we should tell people, being glib about this, there are people who I believe are victims of Jean Gomeshi, and his voice was an unwelcome presence in their life following the abuse that they say that they experienced at his hands, and they couldn't escape his voice. So I figure it's only right that we let you know you're about to hear Jean Gomeshi's voice.
Fair enough.
It's Monday, April 10th, 2017. This is the Ideation Project. What if we're becoming an entire world of exiles? But if we belong everywhere, we're also just a step away from belonging nowhere. Nowhereans. Devoid of roots to spare. What does it mean to truly feel like you belong somewhere? Or, what if you don't belong anywhere? No place to receive a hand. What does it mean to feel like you have no homeland?
Does compassion descend into maybes if it's somebody else's babies? Maybe this has to be about the world rising to say we all belong somewhere. Through all of our imperfections and all of our fear, we belong here.
So Dave, that was episode one of the Ideation Project.
Yeah.
Parts of it.
I guess I should say, maybe to back up, at the risk of seeming overly glib, I do think that in a certain sense, glibness is kind of all he deserves at this point. I have a hard time taking him seriously in any, certainly in a professional context. And if he is a figure of fun, I think that's maybe a fitting little bow on his career up till now.
That was some of the response we got when we alerted people to the existence of this YouTube video and podcast, was like, don't give him any oxygen, don't give him any attention. That's, you know, that's sort of the only thing he has left, is the ability to like, well, he's back,
yeah,
and get people's attention. I don't know. Let's talk about that part of it first, because like I felt like there's nothing wrong or immoral in people being very curious about what his next, you know, like.
No, sure.
I think that's a natural curiosity, and this is a major story. So I don't feel like this is something that we just like, no, the right thing to do is to pretend that it doesn't exist. And I think that people also tend to overvalue like the attention to money ratio online.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know? As we'll see in a coming story, digital ads do not bring in quite as much revenue as you think.
I mean, now, the attention, though he might not be monetizing it right now, is ultimately going to be needed for him to mount any kind of like viable.
Sure.
I have thoughts, obviously, and the internet had a lot of thoughts. Beyond just a general sense of mockery towards, like, was it him or the content itself? Like, what did you make of the content itself?
The content itself, I mean, I hope it will maybe finally put the lie to this weird idea that has stuck around even through the court cases and the public apology and whatnot, that, you know, Gian was a great broadcaster who really did something interesting with the medium. Content-wise, this is pretty bad. I think it sort of reveals that when he doesn't have a staff of talented CBC writers out there to keep him from writing someone else's babies with maybes, that he goes into a dark place. This really is, it's rhyming couplets over a nice little like lavender bath of a synth wash, and independent of, you know, whose name is attached to it, I would really love to meet the person who could listen to 6 minutes of this and go, yes, give me episode two, or track two, I guess.
Track two.
Yeah.
With the whole kind of music fan theme carrying through. I guess that's the thing, is that it almost feels like he wants to not skip a beat and be heard and seen the same way.
Oh, absolutely. Right down to the, it's Monday, April 10th or whatever, you know.
And yet it would be wrong to say that this ignores everything that happened. I mean, it's not such hidden subtext.
You know? Well, what could he possibly mean by exiles? I'm pretty sure he's talking about refugees, right? That's, yeah.
I mean, some of the stuff that's in there, and we only played you a bit of it, like, what if you don't belong anywhere? It's all about exiles, scapegoating. If it can happen to your neighbor down the street, it can happen to you. Do all lives still matter? So, I read this very clearly to me as trying to capitalize on where public sympathies exist right now and where sort of the zeitgeist is at in terms of thinking about Syrian refugees, in terms of thinking about the Black Lives Matter movement, and finding these connections whereby he might be able to kind of like reflect those same sentiments onto his case. This is what Ann Donahue responded. He describes, she was responding to this description of the Ideation Project that Gameshi has up on the site. In a 140 character environment, nuance is often a casualty. The Ideation Project is a creative adventure with the aim of taking a bigger picture view on newsworthy issues and culture, with the goal of asking questions and starting conversations. So Anne responds that this description sure reads like a mansplanation of why there are more newsworthy issues than the history of his own assault on women. It's not that clever of a bait and switch.
No.
You know.
Well, that, like, even to the point where you almost kind of wonder if he thought he was getting away with one on this one, you know? Like, it's so close to what he's gone through, I guess, in his own eyes, without actually, you know, providing anything of substance or any kind of addressing of this, that it almost, like, it wouldn't surprise me if he was sitting back in his studio going, like, no one will ever pick up on the subtleties of these particular, they'll think I'm talking about immigrants or something. And which, again, is maybe indicative of some of his incompetencies as a broadcaster.
Maybe. Okay, so let's look at the two different...
Sure.
Because, I perhaps analyzed this closer than many. And that's the main thing I've noticed is just there is a media bubble that I think mockery or revulsion was the main reply. Mm. There was a core of MRA, Gomeshi, truther supporters who I think hate this kind of globalist... new agey bullshit, but are like pretending to like it because it suits the agenda of being pro Gomeshi. I don't know. He's got them in a quandary. And then, I think I was most surprised by how little interest there was in this, you know, it was not, you know, you can look at the views for a story that was of that magnitude. It doesn't seem to have gotten many people's attention. And just anecdotally, I'm talking to people who heard that it's back. And I said, well, have you listened to it? And they're like, no, I hear it's really boring and people aren't listening to it, but I'm, of course, paying close attention. And I'm wondering, is it as amateurish and as clueless as it appears? Like, could he possibly think that people take him seriously when he says, hey, I'm just trying to start conversations about global issues? It's like, no, you're not. And you know, did he think he was being clever in hiding the subtext about exiles? Or we have to accept that a team of people he paid a lot of money to sat down with him and plotted out not just this episode, but the next year to 5 years. And anticipated every response, every possible iteration of what's going to happen and, you know, what possible – I mean, this was something that was openly discussed in the press when it went down. They talked to PR or crisis management people and said, is there any way he can rehab his image? And they're like trying to solve the puzzle of like, well, you know, what can you do? You can do an apology tour. Mm-hmm. But if you do an apology tour, you kind of have to say what you did. You know, you kind of like you have to actually admit that you did something. And then you got to worry about, are there other people who might come out with more allegations if you start apologizing? And I know that there are.
Right.
So you can't really do that, you know? Or you could go, like, as they say in wrestling, you could turn heel.
He could be the flag-waving MRA, whatever. Well, but that's sort of part of why this sort of thing would be extra tricky for him in any case, because, like, his constituency, like, he didn't have a lot of fans among the MRAs and the, you know, rebel types before this came out, right? His group of fans was exactly the kind of people who are going to be especially horrified by the kind of allegations that were made against him, you know, and who are going to be especially attuned to what steps, if any, he could take to sort of get back into their good graces. And so just because he's paying a team of people doesn't mean he's paying a team of good people.
There is a viable play if he were to say, I used to be, if he embraced the right and said, I used to be brainwashed by the left until I was targeted, and now I'm with you guys. And I think that he could probably have a weird Alex Jonesy career. And I think if he was just looking to align towards having a career and getting paid, a lot of these people on his side who think he got railroaded would give him Patreon money or crowdfunding money, and he could function and have like a weird political podcast that's about anti-feminism stuff or whatever the hell. But I think that he's more interested in, like, I think he still thinks he can have it back.
Well, yet to me, I think, and this may be a simplistic view of his personality, but nothing I've seen would contradict it, but like, he's an egomaniac. I genuinely don't believe that he has any sense that he couldn't get his position back, right? Like, if he thought the only way he could stay in the public eye would be to go heel turn. This was the guy who, when the allegations first dropped, went to the CBC with pictures of what he had done to these women, thinking it would exonerate him.
Yeah.
That doesn't strike me as someone who has scads of self-awareness when it comes to, like, how he comes across to other people necessarily. And I just think ultimately with go back to egomania, I think that will explain.
That's the a lot more, razor.
Yeah. Like
one.
That's the, you know, just like what would a man who is utterly convinced of his own importance do? And he would jump in with like a, you know, slightly tangential, let's light the, you know, aroma candles and take a hot bath. And really think about what it means to be a Nowherian or whatever it is.
Yeah. I tend to think that you got it right. I mean, there's part of me that just thinks like, no, this is all part of the plan. He's absorbing the scorn. He'll absorb the ridicule. And he'll maybe being boring is part of the plan. And if he's boring for long enough, people will stop scorning. They'll stop paying attention. But then it's normalized that he's back. And then perhaps he can claw his way back to some kind of career. But then I can't even make sense of that theory, because what the hell is his show going to be? I don't think he's going to be able to get guests. You know, he's
well,
not
that'll
gonna
be interesting.
You know, and listening to him just talk over New Age music in this like self-help way. Yeah.
I mean, to go back a bit too, I think a lot of what we're talking about here also has to do with whether he deserves a public career. He could go get his, you know, accountant's license and put up a storefront in the Beaches, and I don't think anyone would bother him for the rest of time, whatever he did, right? But, like, he wants to be the old Gian again.
Yeah. I think that's exactly it. And people will say, like, oh, what do you want from him? Hasn't he suffered enough? And he's got to eat. And I don't have the power to deny this guy a career. And he's got every right to put out a podcast. Any asshole can put out a podcast, obviously.
Anyone at all.
Ultimately, the public will decide whether they want to listen to this guy or not.
Yeah.
It's just the idea, like, exile. Like, there is such a thing as just people not wanting to hear your fucking voice anymore.
Yeah.
And not trusting you and not wanting to listen to you. You're not exiled. And to suggest, like, I don't want to get all hot about this. It's funnier than it is offensive.
Yeah.
The kind of parallel he's trying to draw.
The idea that, like, you can no longer stroll into the Horseshoe Tavern and everyone goes, hey, like, it's cheers, is, like, a meaningful form of exile. Or, like, what, like, that you have to retreat to your, you know, presumably $2 million-something home in the Beaches. And again, that to me just feeds into egomania. What kind of person goes through what he went through and assumes he was exiled, assumes he has something in common with, like, a Syrian refugee who just got, like, booted back on the plane at JFK Airport, you know? Like,
on to duly noted.
Hooray!
Dave, what do you have for us?
My duly noted is going to go back to my Edmonton roots here. So last week, really bizarre story came out of Variety involving Edmonton Oilers owner Daryl Cates. These are all allegations, but a Brazilian model actress who's been on Jane the Virgin alleged in a separate court filing something to do with her husband suing the PR company that represents Daryl Cates. It's convoluted, but the nub of it is that she is alleging in these documents that at some point Daryl Cates offered her money for sex, then a role in a Hollywood film. He's recently become a bit of a Hollywood producer, or attempted Hollywood producer, maybe.
Bit of being the operative.
Yeah. You know, he's got enough money to do whatever he wants. And then at some point it boiled down, she claims that he was going to pay her about $20,000 a day to have sex with him a few times a month and, you know, go out and be, like, basically be an escort.
Yeah.
Obvious, all unproven allegations, whatever. The interesting thing, though, is that still as of this Wednesday morning, the Edmonton Journal has not written a peep on this.
In
its, yeah, this was pointed out relatively soon afterwards, but nothing has happened.
Now, I read about this in the National Post, I believe.
Yeah, the National Post wrote about it. CBC wrote about it.
And the Edmonton Journal is a post-media paper.
It is.
And the story, though unproven, these allegations had enough substance to them. I think there was evidence of a money transfer between him
and supposedly her. He has given her $35,000, something like
it's
that.
A solid news story, sleazy and
sleazy and salacious, one, but
about a major public figure in Edmonton.
Yeah.
And the paper hasn't even covered it.
Hasn't touched it at all.
Dave, why do you think that is?
I've heard rumors about why that is, something to do with, on legal advice, they decided to step away from it. But it would obviously be different legal advice than literally every other publication in the country got. But, like, realistically, the Edmonton Journal has been notably and somewhat notoriously spineless when it comes to the Edmonton Oilers and, you know, Daryl Cates in particular. A fun fact about the Journal is they used to be part owners of the Oilers back in the days when there were 30 people helping keep the team in town. But since then, since Daryl Cates has bought them, in ways as benign as sort of like, this has been a last place team for 10 straight years and, you know, like, just nary a peep of management or anything like that, to obviously the arena, Rogers Place, which Cates got an incredibly sweetheart deal in that is now reverberating out. They're tossing people out of, you know, condo buildings near there. And the Journal was, the polite way would be, say, a cheerleader.
Right.
The maybe impolite way would be, like, doing things that a billionaire would allegedly offer a Brazilian model $20,000 a day for. all alleged. But, like, and this is kind of a thing with regional papers that, like, you know, you don't rock the boat of the professional sports team in town because, you know, they're, to a degree, they're a meal ticket, right? Everyone's going to read about what the Oilers are doing, right?
Yeah.
But the Journal has kind of always gone above and beyond, I think. And this just seems like, and, you know, like, in a certain sense, it's, yeah, it's not the earth-shakingest story. It might just be salacious allegations. But, like, the idea that the owner of your team is getting in something this ridiculous and you're just whiff on it seems odd to me.
Well, sadly for Edmontonians, the Edmonton Journal remains their only source of information. So they will never know about this.
It's true, yeah.
Duly noted. I just want to duly note my own discomfort and surprise at my discomfort with this story that surprised and shocked and horrified everybody. Just so upsetting, this video of this United Airlines passenger getting forcibly removed. And the follow-up to this was that the doctor who was removed from the plane, big rush to find out who is he, and you know, this early report that he's a doctor and that he wouldn't leave because he had to see his patients. Does that hold up? All of which is like, that's the job of journalists to go and find out if that's true.
Sure.
And what they found out was that this guy has criminal charges in his past and some other unpleasant stuff in his past, all of which is now like major international news about this guy.
Yeah.
And a familiar pattern played out where the public who have like, what do you call that kind of, you know, when amateurs try to get in this and they make cases for like basic human decency and say things like, what does this possibly have to do with United's behavior? That might seem rational to a civilian, but we experts were very quick to say, no, this was fair game. This is a major news story. It's about him. And we had to report this. I am usually very firmly on the side of publishing all. On this one, I felt really uncomfortable. And it was just like, he's a grandfather, he's got these kids. And like, I'm like, and part of it was that it was very sleazily reported. The fact that he is a great poker player who made hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker was sort of like sandwiched in there with some sex crime stuff. And it just felt like, now here's this teardown piece. And then I had to wonder, is United doing counter intel and counter propaganda against this guy? But I don't think so. I just think that the journalists were like, well, there's more juiciness to the story and there's more facts to report. But it was one of these ones where I felt like, thank God I didn't have to make the call as to whether or not to report that or not, because I would have been very, very uncomfortable reporting it.
Well, I feel like maybe a guideline for something like this is, you know, did he choose to get involved in this story? It's one thing if like, oh, you know, Chewbacca mom. Oh, it turns out, you know, she's beaten her kids. What a terrible person, right? Like,
wait, has she?
No. Sorry, that's bad. I was trying to milkshake duck that. Yeah.
No, I hear you. There's no consent. It all happened to him. The whole thing is so horrible. And, you know, he didn't ask for any of it.
And I mean, obviously, it has far more serious resonance with, you know, as people pointed out, this is the turning the guy into a bad guy. Yeah, but what a terrible person he is that has happened with a lot of the things that led to Black Lives Matter protests and stuff, right? Like, the no angel, I believe, is the short term for this, right? So it's sort of like, well, you know, maybe those Chicago cops knew that he was a gambler and that's why they cracked his head open on a seat.
It's part of why I hate it, is that it's that part of the news story where they're like, you might have been shocked and appalled by what happened to this person, but here's why you don't have to care about them.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's why they're not really a person like you.
Duly noted.
Okay, our second sponsor today is FreshBooks. FreshBooks is also a wonderful service for freelancers, small businesses. As you know, in this tax season of ours, it makes your life easier and saves you tons of time. It's something that, like, I appreciate more and more as I get older. Things that I was like, ah, you know, there's a way to do that without paying, so I'll do that. And then you realize that in trying to avoid paying for something, it's just taking you hours and days more than it would have. And then there's sort of like residual, you know, it's in some file, in some Microsoft Word document. It's about taking yourself seriously as a professional and using a tool and figuring that your practice is worth paying for a good tool to take care of your billing, your receipts, your time tracking, and the like. You will not find a better service than FreshBooks. And when you got to do your taxes, it just spits out all the info that your accountant needs. It spits out all the info you need about the taxes you've paid and what you've billed and what you're owed. It saves you time every week. It saves you a ton of time come tax time. Check it out. Try it out for free for 30 days. No credit card required. Go to FreshBooks.com/CanadaLand. If you do become a customer, tell them that FreshBooks sent you. You'll be doing this show a favor. David, you're a former Postie.
I am, yes.
Former post-media employee.
Yes, specifically a National Post-E.
Does that mean that you are now able to speak freely about them, given that you don't work there anymore? Or I'm aware that that could mean...
You know, ask me in like 2 weeks and I'd be happy to discuss my freedom to discuss my former employer.
Conrad Black still works for the National Post, the newspaper that he started. He seems to feel free to speak freely about it. This is a tweet of his after they announced the results of their most recent quarter. It's too late. The bondholders control the company and are content to bleed it dry with the complicity of management. Bankruptcy is next.
What a ridiculous thing for this former press baron to say. I think everyone has nothing but confidence in the board's ability and the executive's ability to, you know, right this ship. It is outrageous that a man who is still employed by the paper would say such things.
You know, they wouldn't pay those kind of bonuses to Paul Godfrey and his management team if they were not able to write this.
One assumes that a bonus is a reward for good behavior.
People have been predicting the demise of the National Post since the National Post began, but there is a feeling, and I am hearing, that this is it. That there is no last shuffle of the debt. There's no rabbit in the hat. We're looking at bankruptcy in a matter of months, and that'll be it for Post Media.
It certainly seems that way. I'm pretty sure I can say that. That is independent analysis that I have read in other places. But no, I mean, when I started in 2010, which wasn't too far after Post Media swooped in and saved the Post and the rest of the chain, even then, it was sort of a running joke, like, you know, permanent death watch. Over the course of that 6 or 7 years now, though, I mean, they've seemed to have tried basically everything. Certainly, better business minds than mine might think there's something left to do here, but...
Well, they are doing something. There is something that they're doing. I think that just like, is it going to survive or not? Of course, that's a primary question, but there are different ways that things could go under, right? And
well, even with Post Media where it is right now, though, there was certainly a time when, you know, maybe you could picture them hiving off parts of it, you know, some rich Vancouver guy will buy a couple papers or something like that. But as they stand right now, I'm not so sure. First of all, just like in terms of, you know, what they owe the bondholders, et cetera, like the actual corporate structure of it, I'm not sure you'd be allowed to do that. But secondly, just in terms of what's left, I'm not actually sure there is a lot of there in that could get bought off.
Maybe it's Pollyannish to think, but you know what? Like, Vancouver is in a sorry state and will need some kind of a news source. And I think the people in Vancouver, ultimately, there will be enough of them who'll pay for that. Edmonton will need a news. Like, there are all these communities. A lot of them, Post Media is the only game in town besides a CBC presence, which waxes and wanes, depends on where you are. Sometimes, some places it's good. Whether or not there's a sound business case for a Post Media newspaper or a newspaper, there is a sound business case for a news organization.
Yeah.
In a lot of these communities, and in many of these communities, Post Media has the best brand. And if you're trying to decide between starting your own new news brand and taking over an established Post Media brand, in a different type of corporate structure, it may have made sense to some entrepreneur or, you know, and sadly, it also makes sense to people who like, I don't care if I lose money on this because I'm, let's say I own the Edmonton Oilers and I can control the press if I own the paper, you know, that's, but to the journalists who work at these papers, what has happened in the past is you hope that somebody comes and buys the failing newspaper and tries to turn it around. The way that Post Media is set up, I think, basically prohibits that possibility from ever coming to pass. And as Conrad Black is saying here, the debt load is so heavy and their actions tell it. This isn't speculation. There's still revenue coming in. There's still assets that they own, and they can act like the mobsters and Goodfellas and just bleed it dry, and then set it on fire. It's the most destructive form of capitalism, playing itself out over years, because the time to have sold would have been years ago.
Mm-hmm. I just bit my tongue so hard that I am bleeding right now.
All right. I can't sit here with a former Post Media employee and do all the talking. So I appreciate the very sensitive position you're in. And we'll move on to the next topic with the promise to our listeners that former National Post editor Ken White has agreed to come on this program and talk about the National Post and Post Media. So we'll get into this in more depth soon.
Champlain selects a lush and sheltered site. What is now Quebec City? It is the first permanent European settlement in Canada.
The producers behind the series said they regretted offending anyone, but In this format and in a tightly packed 10-hour time frame, we necessarily left out huge swaths of history. The National Historic Site of Port Royal was founded 3 years before Quebec City, which the show depicts as the first permanent European settlement.
Dave, I want to talk about, once more, the CBC's ongoing history of Canada, the story of us.
Right, our story.
Yeah. It's your story. It's my story.
It's all of ours.
This is a slow motion train wreck that is only 30%
complete.
Done. Complete.
Yeah.
I don't know. What is the word for
30% off the rails?
Yeah. CBC has apologized to the province of Quebec for the inaccuracies and the offense and the depictions of the French as
dirty, swarthy,
stained fur charlatans, and you know, just the many inaccuracies, and like there's just like who they cast and who gets to talk about history and what gets left out. They're three episodes in, and there's a lot of Canadian history, and the thing about history is most of it's pretty controversial.
Yeah, especially in this country, especially lately.
They're setting up like some kind of discussion forum. I've never seen a situation like this before, where they realize they're fucked. And I have a bit of information from people involved in the production. Some people who were telling me like, I heard what you had to say about it, and yeah, it's bad, but you have no idea how bad it could have been. We were actually impressed that they got it up to that. Like, apparently the production itself was a huge debacle, and like you could just imagine in a bureaucracy like that, as you're like dealing with casting issues, the plot issues, getting Trudeau involved, like how many hands were involved in baking that, and just like how is it going to come out? And then the fact that the whole fucking thing is a American franchise. They bought the format to the story of us. Like, you know, like that's the way it works in TV. It's weird that you need to, like, the fact that you had to buy that from the States.
You need the, Law and Order Canada edition of, like, Canadian history or something.
That's
like
it.
That.
It's
like,
their TV format for our history. But anyhow, the thing that is unprecedented to me is, like, usually you fuck up. If it's really bad, you apologize and you pretend it never happened. But they have to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, like, there's a couple things here. First of all, a bunch of guys in Toronto trying to pass off an American idea as the story of Canada, and then everyone else in Canada complaining about it, is actually the story of us. Like, the meta story here is Canada. Yeah. So kudos to whoever managed to, like, whatever Tim and Eric executive at the CBC managed to pull that one off. But yeah, like, secondly, I guess more than anything, I'm just surprised they would even bother to apologize while this is still, because it just seems like maybe the smarter play here would just be like, let it play out. People will complain at the start. It's possible too, like, if we want to give them the benefit of the doubt, that like later episodes will, you know, have better representations or something. I don't know. Maybe there's an episode on the Truth and Reconciliation Committee coming, or I don't believe that. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here.
I bet there's a Winnipeg General Strike episode. I bet there's FLQ episode.
Yeah.
I'm sure those will go over just fine.
Perfect.
I guess right now they're just like, they can't make the show good.
Yeah.
I guess they could kind of like furiously go through each episode and try to figure out like what's going to piss people off and get rid of it.
And like try to sell more ads.
I think it probably will get very Tim and Eric absurdist, because as they, better to have it make no fucking sense than to have to apologize 8 more times. So they'll probably just be like huge plot gaps.
Right.
Episodes
yeah.
will come in at like 23 minutes for
they'll just jump ahead.
Hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the revisionist part of it is that you can just sort of keep that narrative intact and have like a little addendum or an add-on. Like, of course there were some things that shouldn't have happened. And now back to that, the official narrative.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's like, no, you have to disassemble the entire thing. You can make fun of, and really you should, the actors, the celebrity idiots, for the most part, commenting on this stuff. The music.
I thought George St. Pierre had some very interesting things to say about fighting.
I'm getting a lot of hell for not knowing who he was, but I don't speak sports. But I think that they could have done the best possible version of it, and it still would have been a fiasco, because as soon as you call it the story of us and attempt to tell the story of Canada in 10 episodes and frame it as the authoritative story of the entire country, and also take on, as CBC always does, in a way that I just don't know why they do. Like, even in, like, really anodyne and what's the word? Like, PBS is by no means shocking, edgy content. But they also don't feel the need to patriotically cheerlead for America. So they could have Ken Burns talk about prohibition or the history of baseball. He's not trying to give you some like negative, nasty history. It's just interesting because the history is dirty and nasty and interesting. But CBC always assumes this burden that they are going to have fireworks at the end and a flag waving. It's a very... like, why take that on?
Well, I mean, CBC obviously occupies a very different place in the public consciousness than PBS does. PBS doesn't need to wave the flag because, like, they've got 150 million people who would never watch them doing that. So, like, they can afford to be a little bit more... like, I think there's a case to be made that, like, the CBC sort of has to fill that role because there aren't a lot of... well, I don't know.
It's not in their mandate.
I'm saying, I suppose. But like, I can understand why if you work there, you feel like you have to do that. Because like, so for instance, this is obviously part of the Canada 150 thing. And I do think in a certain way, this is taking some of the flack that could maybe be spread out along Canada 150. Mm-hmm. I'm generally an arts journalist. And from talking to some of the people in the arts, they're all, not all, I shouldn't say all, but many of them are treating this sort of Canada 150 thing as like, okay, well, like, you know, where's the smallest maple leaf we can put on our shoulder to justify getting this funding? You know, they think these sort of nationalistic things are ridiculous and myopic and, you know, all the sort of things implied.
But it's a bonanza, $500 million.
It is. So, but like, I could see where the CBC in that climate, if you're assuming they're coming from that, might have to be like, okay, well, like, somebody has to care about Canada here. Somebody has to, you know, like, get up there and wave the flag and pat Justin Trudeau on the back.
Oh, it's like forever running it like it's some small town newspaper where you're like, is our role to boost this town or to tear it down? People, what are we here to do? Come on, let's get serious. It's like, it's not for babies. We're, you know, it's not like, there are 35 million people in this country. Like, I don't think that it would cost them anything if they just played it straight and went for what any historian writing a book, go for what's interesting. You go for the color, and you go for the thing that is contested or that's new, and you try to make people see it in a new light.
Right. Sort of the cosmos of Canadian history or whatever, like the Neil deGrasse Tyson version.
Don't mention him to me.
Okay. Sorry.
We have a thing. He's not aware of it, but anyhow.
I guess, like, they're not PBS, but I generally accept the point. It's like, why wouldn't you just do a relatively straight-ahead history of Canada?
Sure.
Like, because, like, that also doesn't really exist. And that is also something that a national broadcaster would be well-served in doing, right? Like, when was the last time there was 10 hours of documentary, the history of Canada, released? We get Heritage Minutes. That's like the Canadian, you know, like, oh.
I guess,
like,
that's it too. It's like, it's not so much about the cheerleading as much as like, it's so insulting to think that I'll only watch this if you have like zooming cameras, celebrity, quasi-celebrity spokespeople, and really cheesy dramatic reenactments. It's almost like you're admitting that the history itself couldn't possibly hold your interest.
Well, it's sort of that classic, again, Canadian thing where it's just sort of like, you know, we need to pump up the War of 1812 because... I don't know, America's got the Revolutionary War, so, you know, if we don't have a war, who are we? What's going on? Like, Vimy Ridge, which just happened too, like, we can't, our history isn't interesting enough, you know, like, straightforwardly explained.
That is your Canada Land Shortcuts. David, thank you.
Thank you.
You can email me. I will read what you send me and respond when I can. And I'm at jesse@canadalandshow.com. We are on Twitter @CanadaLand. Dave Barry, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Pleasure Motors, or you can go to my Squarespace page, thedavidbarry.com.
Our website is canadalandshow.com. Our crowdfunding site is patreon.com/CanadaLand. People, we are selling tickets to live book tour shows in Toronto, Vancouver, Victoria, Calgary, Saskatoon, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Montreal, Hamilton, London, and Kingston. Go to canadalandshow.com/booktour to find links to those tickets. This show is produced by Russell Gregg and Ali Graham. If you like what we do, please support us.